Drivers make freaking mistakes, man. This is just what happens. Sometimes you don't, you're not working at your optimal. But having one or two races where that happens doesn't mean that you forget everything that's happened for like the 3 years beforehand. And that's what was happening with Carlos.
How about look at Max Verstappen? Because we're not talking about Carlos Sainz Jr. here, are we, Shez? That's not what we're on about here. Charles
We are,
Leclerc,
that's the problem.
no, well, that is Charles Leclerc's problem. Because if he's performing each and every single week to his uppermost potential ceiling, then the comparator shouldn't be Carlos Sainz. It should be Max Verstappen, Shez.
But he still has a delta to drive to. He would have been 2 seconds ahead had he pitted straight away. You know, at one point it looked like he was going to lap the field at one point before they released them. But, you know, this is not a big issue.
The original intention of safety car per Eccleston when he brought it out in 1994, RIP Ayrton Senna de Silva, was to make the racing sexy again, right? When it became a procession, if there was a crash, bring out the safety car, bunch back up the field, and you've got another race from square one. I don't think in 2024 we need that again, because we've got virtual safety car, and if it's that dangerous, red flag the bloody race. Am I missing something, chaps? I don't know. What say you, Baxty? Hello and welcome to another episode of The Shakedown. With me as always, my brethren, my brothers, my friends and yours, Cezinho and Baxty. How are we doing, gents? It doesn't matter how you are doing, because on this day we need to talk about some F1-age, do we not? Do we not? I think we
do. Yeah, what's been happening?
Oh, mate, nothing much. Just the Miami Grand Prix, a safety car, a Lando Norris maiden victory, Oscar Piastri losing his mind, Lewis Hamilton driving a fast car for the first time season to date. Just a couple bits and bobs. Mohamed Ben Sulaim thinking that he's Beyonce to Lando Norris's Kelly Rowland. Just a few bits and bobs, but we will touch on them. Baxty, since you reacted to that, let's talk about MVS first, because I think we're aligned. Let's front load the agreement and back load the fighting. Baxty, talk to me about Mohamed Ben Sulaim, because I think you agree, much like me, that that dude is doing too much at the moment as far as taking spotlight from the drivers or now.
He's an absolute moron. He just wants to be front and center all the time in front of the camera, and he's been in, he's been accused of corruption left, right and center. He's been in position what, 2 and a bit years, and there's a reason why F1 don't trust him anymore. It's all about the glamour for him and the publicity. Like, for all their faults, the previous two occupants, John Tott and Max Mosley, never got in front of a camera as much as MBS does. They get on with the job of letting the actual competitors be the stars, and they spoke up when they needed to. Like, if there was a big scandal, you best believe Max Mosley was there. Jean Todt was a little bit more hands-off, but, when they need to be the public face, they're there, whereas he's just there all the time and causing problems. How many resignations has it been now? We had another big one today. The CEO going, just ridiculous. Ridiculous. I'm done with MBS. Have been for a long time. Just goodbye.
Yeah, me and you both. Shez, chime in on this before I go scorched earth on everything MBS.
I take Baxter's point actually about Mosley and Jean Todt, because I think every FIA president has had their flaws, right? Max was very much making shady deals in the background and sort of tinkering with the essence of Formula One, like the rules and regulations, like big rules and regulations, and trying to force those through. That was a problem too. The reason he ended up going, aside from the stuff that was in the news of the world, was the fact that he was trying to bring in a $40 million budget cap. The MBS seems to sort of try and have his voice out there a lot and make a big show of things. And I think he created that CEO role that you've just talked about so that he could do that and not have to, not mess with the internal running of the FIA, which has improved, I think, even with him in charge. The only problem is, and it goes back to that thing that you guys, that actually your friend Ahmed said, that man, we're not going to have very many opportunities where a person of color can be in charge of the FIA. And when you've got someone that is just this thick-headed, are we ever going to get an opportunity again? That I totally agree with Ahmed on this. That for me is the biggest problem with MBS, is that there's already so many stereotypes out there, and he just sits there and plays to every single one. And it's just going to make life so difficult for other people in his from his demographic and mine and yours that want that role in the future.
Very well said, sir. I wouldn't even make it that complicated, those shows. That douchebag, that dude is just an absolute cesspit of a human being. I've never in my life seen somebody whose role it should be to shy away from attention and be in the background, making sure that the competitive landscape is fair and true, and that the rules are sound and robust and instituted fairly and consistently. Somebody with that as the scope of their role do the Beyoncé thing at every single juncture. Get out of your own way, MBS. It's absolutely not good enough. This one was meant to be Lando Norris's time. He was supposed to be front and center. Why am I seeing you walk over the walkway with that chap to the podium, giving him some Zac Brown lecture as if somehow you were involved or instrumental in Lando Norris's maiden victory? Stop, MBS, injecting yourself into circumstances, sir, where you do not belong, as if you haven't got other bigger regulatory fires to fight, sir. It's not good enough at this point, gents. And I'm not surprised that people are leaving. Natalie Robin, CEO extraordinaire, employed to transform FIA and nail the key items. And again, because she's sick at her job, why would she want to be associated with that fella who is nothing of the sort? I don't blame them. And more people are going to leave, gents. More people will leave in
All we
short
need to
order.
say about MBS is this: go find that clip on YouTube of him driving what the 2009 Renault and him binning it on a straight.
He's a clown.
I mean, yeah, he's giving Lando Norris a lecture. He's like, mate, the only time you got behind the wheel of an F1 car, you binned it on a
He's an
straight.
absolute clown. He's
Like,
just
come.
he's just
I'm sure he
he's
had a decent rally career.
he
Don't
did,
doubt
he
that,
did, he did. This is true. Dude is just a clown,
just
Baxter.
because
But
he had gone.
I mean, all I was going to say is that the problem here is one of appearance. The people that have been working at the FIA that have left, they're all impressive people with great CVs. Natalie Robin came from the automotive world, and brought some of that expertise to the FIA. And you cannot say that what she brought and what Steve Nielsen brought, all of the people that have left recently, that they didn't bring positive impact to the FIA. The problem is that all of the positive stuff that's happened in the background, there has been positive stuff, is overshadowed by the stuff that's happening front and center of camera.
Well, that's all that anybody cares about, shows, because that's all that we see now. That's all that we see.
But a
Perception is
lot of
reality.
those, yeah. But the way that MBS came into this, where he said, look, I'm going to leave the running of the FIA to other people. He actually has done that. He has. It's just that he's then made it about him in front of the camera, and that's what's detracted from the good stuff that's actually happening at the FIA. And there's a disconnect there between reality and appearance.
I honestly, Shez, I don't know what more to say about this, dude. I will full stop it there. Shez, actually, let me challenge back on this. What good stuff has he
Please.
instituted? Because I and this is my maybe me being a noddy F1 mind, but I in front, like at face value, all I see is the FIA in real time dropping more balls each and every single time, as far as safety car, which we will get onto in short order. But educate me for a second, Chez. What have they done so well?
I mean, two examples. The first is the obvious one that we've just talked about, that the role that Natalie Robbins come out of, that CEO role, is the first time that role has been a thing at the FIA. And actually separating the president's role from the day-to-day running of the FIA, I think was a brilliant move. because it means that someone is dedicated to just making sure that not just F1, but all of the other championships that are managed by the FIA are run properly and have adequate attention paid to them. One. Second, F1 specific, not everyone's going to agree with me about this at all, but the fact that they have, the FIA have gone about looking at both the technical and sporting rules of F1 with a microscope and try to work out how we can get from where we are at the moment to an objective, i.e. better following, more consistent stewarding. And I know that hasn't been fully achieved yet, but it's not. Listen, I agree with that, right? I agree that it hasn't been, but it's not like that's something that's brand new. There have been stewarding issues throughout the history of the FIA. It's just that we've kind of glossed over when Charlie Whiting was inconsistent because it was Charlie Whiting, but it's not like it didn't happen when he was the race director as well. But the fact that they have actually gone out and tried to codify what it means, what the rules are for overtaking. They came out with the draft. It wasn't particularly clear. They've tried to revise those again. All of those things are iterative things that are happening. It may not work straight away, but the fact that they're being iterative about it and trying to make the product better, how can you blame them for that? How can you say that that's a bad thing?
Well, I will see that, Shez, and I will raise you this. You can blame them because they haven't been successful, not anywhere near. And how? Hold on for a second as well, Shez. How very dare you blaspheme about Charlie Whiting? Go away, Shez. I'm not entertaining that. Charlie Whiting
was perfect, was he?
No, he wasn't perfect. No, oh, he absolutely okay. wasn't perfect.
Spa 2008, that's all I need to say.
Fair
thank
play.
You very Steve. Much.
Bang to rights, sir. Thank Charlie you, wasn't perfect. But nobody's not going to tell me that he's not better than these clown show that we've got going on. Let's talk about this safety car, chaps, because I can't hold it in any longer. Listen, this safety car, the F1 world rejoiced, yeah, because I think we'd been suffering at the hands of the Max Verstappen domination. The paradox as far as Max is concerned, that he's been so good for so long that people are just turning off their TV. And we've talked about this ad infinitum. Then when Lando Norris had a new story and a new why or incentivization for F1 fans to get excited and watch the sport and revel in something new and a new plot line, and everybody loves Lando and he's so good looking and he's such a, all that other good stuff. Okay, that's brilliant. Tick. Massive tick in the box of Liberty Media, and granted they've just announced their results and it's gangbusters, and Greg Maffei was there and he was super happy that Miami Grand Prix and Trump and everybody else and rejoice. However, chaps, if we're going to put on our process spectacles, that's not the way the safety car is supposed to work. Now, I know, Baxty, I know that the rules state, for the avoidance of doubt, that they can deploy a safety car whenever, right? It's meant to be a safety car. So as soon as it needs to be deployed, then they deploy it. And whether it picks up first or second or third, whatever, they can sort that out. That detail is lost in the roundings. However, chaps, I think that's bull feathers. Because in Abu Dhabi, as an example, had that safety car been deployed and just picked up Max Verstappen in second and Lewis been allowed to go around the track, gap Max Verstappen anywhere to the tune of an incremental 20 seconds, which allowed him, facilitated him to go and get a free pit stop, the world would have been in outrage. So why now, just then, Baxty? Because it was Lando Norris and the story was good and the viewing figures were up, just because of all of the aforementioned, we can't hide our gaze from the process ineptitude, surely, Baxty?
But Lando would have pitted anyway. And he had an 11-second lead when the safety car came out, and you lose 9 seconds in a short pit lane. So he would have had a 2-second advantage over Max under that safety car. And it wasn't like they would have had... He was ahead when the safety car happened, so they would have had to have... Well, no, because if he pitted, he would have had to... He would have come out wherever. But the simple fact is that he had enough of a lead to still come out in front. If he pitted straight away, He didn't pit straight away, and that's where the confusion comes in. He still has a delta to drive to. I don't see why. Yeah, he got lucky. Yes, I'm not going to dispute that. But he still has a delta to drive to. He would have been 2 seconds ahead had he pitted straight away. At one point, it looked like he was going to lap the field at one point before they released them. But, this is not a big issue for me, personally.
But actually, that was a problem there, wasn't it? Because he didn't pit, because he'd missed the pit entry when the safety car was deployed, which means that he was already at the pit exit when Mylander came out. So actually what should have happened is Bert Mylander should have immediately picked him up. Everyone else should have caught up. He would have had to do another lap and then come in. And then he would have come out sixth or seventh. That's the reason why it's an issue. I get that. I do get that. But also Bert Mylander missed him. So if he missed him, then you're going to have that delta that Lando is going to, the time that he loses driving to the delta is less than what everyone loses driving behind
Bang.
The safety car.
And right? That's the issue. But Shez, there is an easy fix to that, right? Because the virtual safety car delta is, they can fix
the same,
well, it's supposed to be the same, but where did, before the safety car popped out, Lando's delta, the difference between Verstappen and Lando was 11 seconds. Afterwards, it was 30. So somebody,
because he's got a delta, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So fix that bloody delta then. There should, by the time Lando, if he's driving to a delta that the FIA manage and fix in real time, whether that's virtual safety car, then surely, if they're not noddy, then they should be able to fix that delta. His delta and Max Verstappen's delta should be the same. The safety car can drive at that delta. What, I don't understand. There's something that I'm missing here, chaps. When Lando comes to pit, the time between him and Max Verstappen should be the same. It can't be 11 seconds by the time the safety car comes out, and then 30 by the time that Lando pits. Somebody needs to do some mental arithmetic here in the best, most intelligent sporting formula in the world. It's nuts. And to your point, Baxty, I've heard people espouse this thesis. Well, then let him pit with 11 seconds. I'm not sure that I trust the 9-second delta loss, but let's assume for the sake of the argument that it's correct. A pit stop when you've got a margin of 2 seconds to execute it and get the tyres on and off is a very different proposition to having 30 seconds in hand, right, Baxty? Let him do it then with 11 seconds. We can't say, oh, well, he would have pitted anyway and come out anyway. That's not the way that sports works. Right? Not in my mind. If this is WWE in sports entertainment, then let it be such. If we're using the safety car to spruce up the racing and reset everyone, then cool, let it be that. But if it's a safety car, then make it be a bloody safety car. Or, as my guy Windsor has put forth, why don't we just use, why do you even need a safety car? Safety car, the original intention of safety car per Eccleston when he brought it out in 1994, RIP Ayrton Senna de Silva, was to make the racing sexy again, right? When it became a procession, if there was a crash, bring out the safety car, bunch back up the field, and you've got another race from square one. I don't think in 2024... we need that again, because we've got virtual safety car. And if it's that dangerous, red flag the bloody race. Am I missing something, chaps? I don't know. What say you, Baxty?
Lot to process there. On your point about the pit stop, I would counter that simply by saying that McLaren is one of the best pit crews in the pit lane. I mean, I think they are probably third to Ferrari and Red Bull. I mean, of course, they set the world record last year, and they are consistently one of the fastest pit crews. So if there's a pit crew that I would back to do a good pit stop under that pressure, it would be McLaren. If it was Mercedes, I wouldn't. I'd just be like, yeah, good one, boys. But if it was McLaren, Red Bull, Ferrari, I'd trust them to nail it. This is all motorsport happening, isn't it? This isn't. Yeah, this isn't Abu Dhabi where you've got a race director sort of manipulating events and, positioning cars next to each other and not, basically making the rules up on the fly.
Is it not though, Baxty?
No, because,
How?
So he goes past the pit entry and then they send the safety car out. That's just an unfortunate event, basically. There's not a lot you can do. You can't account for that. That's not something you can run simulation on. How now, that's just something.
Just bring out the bloody safety car. Like I said originally, right at the outset, if it takes Bert Meinlander 30 seconds to jump in the car and get to the end of the pit lane, then when Lando's coming, when Lando's 40 seconds away from the pit lane, then you need to send it. I just don't understand. Am I oversimplifying here? I know that they came out and said they told Racing 365 News that they made the decision late and that's ultimately why they fumbled. But then that
this raises a wider point, though, because they are very slow at throwing safety cars. Like, you see incidents happen and you're like, well, that's a VSC or that's a safety car. And then you're sat there for like half a lap to a lap.
Unbelievable.
Charlie or even Mazzy would have just been like, right, throw safety car. Whereas Vittich just seems to be like, do I throw a safety car? Do I throw a virtual safety car? What should I do here? Let's throw a safety car. But at which point, you know, it does have a material impact on the race. But this was just a freak circumstance where they've delayed a decision and it's, you know, but it's not like they've gone, oh, yeah, let's spice things up. It's just a confluence of events coming together to cause an outcome. But, so I don't think that this is some kind of major screw up. I think it's just a series of events that no one could have anticipated happening, because you can never predict, you know, Kevin Magnussen punting, you know, Logan Sargeant off the road.
That's fair. That portion is fair. That's act of the gods, right? Mm. But then if you're Oscar Piastri and Carlos Sainz, have you guys seen the transcript of Piastri? I've never even heard that fella swear. He's like stoicism personified each and every single time in the most adverse of circumstances. Mates, F-bombs, get safety car out the way. He can't believe it, right? Because he feels like he's been screwed out of a potential race victory, and or at least the podium, at the very least. And I think he's right, chaps. Safety car for me now, Baxty, just represents, like, you may as well call it like sports entertainment.
But we've seen it happen before. Nonsense. I mean, Carlos got screwed by the safety car in Monza 100%, 2020.
100%.
It was the red flag. He got screwed by the red flag, should I say. But we do see, I mean, Lewis has lost race wins on safety cars. Yeah, Melbourne 2018. Yeah, Sebastian Vettel gets a cheap pit stop and that loses Lewis the race. And the same, he's lost, I think, a race in Monaco, something similar as well. And other drivers have lost races because of safety cars. I think Verstappen and Bottas probably would have beaten Lewis in Imola in 2020.
Oh, 100%.
But then they chucked a safety car and Lewis got the cheap pit stop. See you later. Just because he was in the right position. Yeah, the stewards can't, and the clerk of the course can't predict, you know, where a car is going to be at any point in time. So when they decide to throw the safety car, oh crap, Lando's already passed where Bert Meilander's going to be. Well, you know, tough shit, basically.
I think this is chaos now. You know what? As at May 2024, Shez, do we need to have a serious safety car conversation? Because we've got virtual safety car and red flags are still a thing. I'm not sure that we need an interim tire of a solution per se in the safety car. At this point, do we not just go, Shares, with virtual safety car or red flag? What's the circumstance specific that you would need yourself a safety car and not leverage the aforementioned?
I mean, I think VSC is the intermediate tire, isn't it? For me, that's it, because the safety car, the safety car is a way of absolutely neutralizing the race. You're never going to get a bunch of racing drivers at a delta that's so slow that it's gonna allow you to be as safe as it is behind the safety car. How often do we hear drivers behind the SC saying, "Oh, he's going too slow"? They can't drive that slow if they're asked to do it on their own and drive to their own delta. I don't think that's going to happen. And the safety car, I think, as Baxty said, this every safety car is going to benefit one person and it's going to disadvantage another. It happens every single time. And it's the same with the VSC. The law of unintended consequences means that you're going to put a VSC out for everything. And every single time someone's going to say, that came at a really bad time for me. And it came at a really good time for me. There isn't one fix that always fixes everything without having any flaws to it. There never has been, and there never will be. But the safety car is a tried and tested solution. The VSC is a nice intermediary when you've got something that can be cleared away quickly, but I don't think it's a fix-all for everything. When you need everyone to go super slow, I don't think it does it. And I don't think a red flag and the disruption that that causes, and the fact that you absolutely nullify everything, where you literally get a free pit stop and you get carte blanche to fix all the damage on your car, is a way to solve it.
So I can give you an example from this very weekend that's just passed, and that was the sprint race, when obviously there was the pile up in turn one, and that created a lot of debris on the track that the drivers were then forced to go through the pit lane. And you know, obviously we saw what happened with Lewis. He went massively over the, because he forgot to put his pit limiter on, and he went massively over the speed limit. It gave him a drive through penalty, subsequent 20-second time penalty. And I think that's a good instance when you can have a safety car, because then they can lead the cars safely through the pit lane, and give them that opportunity to not, you know, get punctures by driving over stuff. And it's, I think I agree with Shares. I think the VSC is a good intermediary. I think, you know, it kind of, if it's a minor accident that they can get away cleared quickly, it's of least disruption to the drivers. Whereas if you've got an accident like the one you had with Sargeant and Magnussen that needed a bit more time, partly because the barriers were damaged as well, but could be fixed in a way that didn't need a red flag, then you've got to give them the time, and for safety, give them the opportunity to fix it and get the car off track as well. Because, you know, if they were doing a VSC and maybe somebody's tires get cold and they slide off, they could drive into Sargeant's car. Unlikely, but, you know, giving a worst case scenario here. And that's, you know, I feel like you've got two good options there. And the red flag should only really be thrown in the most severe of circumstances. Yeah, if there's a compromised barrier that needs fixing, throw the red flag. If the car is in bits all across the track and there's just no safe way of getting them through it, throw the red flag, give them the time to clear it up. But yeah, I think the way they've got it right now works really well. And I think Shez nailed it again when he said somebody's going to benefit and somebody's going to be disadvantaged. I mean, you know, how many times have we seen Lewis get screwed by a safety car in the last few years? He's always been in a half decent position, and then the safety car comes out and, like, end of his race. You know, that's just racing, man. That's just part and parcel of racing.
I don't believe in it anymore, Baxter. I think we should be better than that. Safety car isn't the only solve anymore. Now we've got too much bloody technology, and the FIA have VSC. I think safety car should
people
be.
Will still benefit from that and not that, that's
from,
the thing
from the VSC.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%, bro. But yeah. But it's not as, it's extents, isn't it? It's different in extents, not kinds now. And I just think safety car, I don't know, chaps. Especially, or how about this? You know what? As an interim, as a compromise, lest we be doomed to talk about safety car for another 60 minutes. As a compromise, how about we leverage safety car effectively? How about every time we use safety car, it doesn't result in a controversial circumstance like Abu Dhabi, because they don't, do you know what I mean? They bring it in a lap before it's meant to be brought in per the rules and set a different precedent. Or how about we deploy it, change the rules every time safety cars to be deployed. If we can't catch up the lead, another lap under virtual safety car, deploy Mylando and have him come out picking up the lead. I just don't see why this is so complicated.
Or stop them having pit stops under the VSC, right, or the safety car.
Used to be the rule, didn't it? Which is why the whole Singapore thing happened.
Bang. Yeah. So ergo, I think the conclusion from all this is that there needs to be a rethink in the rules around safety car, and if they are going to institute it properly and uniformly, but there goes I expecting things off of the FIA, whom you've just complimented, Shaz, on their improvements erstwhile for things. I think I'm expecting things of them.
Can't fix everything all at once.
This is true, but I digress. Right, man, let's talk about McLaren quickly. Is the competitive landscape, apparently, if F1 Twitter is to be believed, has changed for the better. Baxty, a McLaren in the hands of Lando Norris, genuine competitors as far as the drivers' championships concerned in 2024 to one Max Verstappen's RB20?
Not this year, I don't think. I mean, obviously, it was a very impressive performance by Lando. And I think the most impressive thing, you know, yeah, he got the luck, but he then gapped Max by 7 seconds. Okay, look, Max did have some floor damage. But I think what was impressive with Max is he was not using that as an excuse. He just said, I got beat. Simple as, yeah, and that's you know, measure of the man. Yeah, I don't give Max a lot of credit, but he deserves it there. Yeah, I think they were probably solidly third. I think they're now probably going to be challenging Ferrari a bit more. It'll be interesting to see what Oscar does with the full upgrade package on his car, because obviously he only had half of it in Miami, whereas Lando had the full package. But yeah, I think. They can definitely take it to Red Bull. Whether they can beat them regularly, I don't think so. I still think Max is going to walk away with the championship pretty easily. But if he has to work for it a bit harder, great. I'm all for it. And it will make him look better in the process.
So it's a good shout. It is a good shout. Shez, talk to me, bruv, because I know you're a big Oscar Piastri fan. What do you think about McLaren's chances of challenging Max Verstappen? Am I drinking out of the cup of copium, or is there some serious teeth to this new McLaren car?
I don't think it's about the car necessarily. It's more what it speaks to about the infrastructure at McLaren, the fact that they seem to have got their processes right. And you know how much I love a good process. But the fact is here in Miami, without that safety car, I don't think Lando was a nailed on winner of that race. And the fact is that there was still a major flaw in that car, which is that it couldn't handle being on the soft tires. So it wasn't able to qualify high enough to make that track position, you know, without the safety car pay. It wasn't enough for the race pace to pay because they didn't have track position, right? And that's still a major flaw. Ferrari, I still think, have the best sort of overall balance in terms of how they're coming up against Red Bull, in that they've got outstanding qualifying pace and now they're starting to get the race pace. I think Stella said afterwards that McLaren was still sort of one big upgrade package away from really being able to do this consistently, and they're not there yet. So yes, really encouraged that in Miami, McLaren were able to show really good race pace. I mean, like Lando was Verstappen, wasn't he, in the final stint? But if you're not able to put your car in a position where it's able to do that in qualifying, then it's meaningless. But whether or not they can bring that pace more consistently later on in the season, don't know. Hopefully.
Here is hoping, Shez. I tell you what, though. I think Max Verstappen in the post-race conference cut a rather ominous figure. I think he was genuinely happy for his good mate, his best friend on the grid, Lando Norris, in his maiden victory. But I've said this, much to the consternation of Max Verstappen fans around the world, that I think Max was more churlish than usual. You heard him crack the joke about ifs, buts and maybes when they asked him whether he could have got it done but for the safety car, and he said something, well, if my mum had balls then she'd be my dad. I was like, oof, Max Verstappen, why so cruel, mate? I don't think Max was happy, you know. I think normalised for that big bloody hole in his Venturi tunnels, I think he might still have made Lando Norris's time very difficult. And I think at the next Grand Prix being Imola, that we might see a hell hath no fury, like a woman scorned type Max Verstappen. I think he's going to want revenge, chaps. It's going to be very serious. And these guys, God help us if Ferrari, in their tests that they're conducting this week, haven't brought some, or don't realise some noticeable improvements, because I think Max is gonna want to take names next time.
I will say this: Lando is very quick around Imola. He's always been very quick around Imola.
Very true. That is an Imola and an Austria guy, isn't he?
Yeah.
He will be quick. Imagine if he defeats Max Verstappen again. Oh, the humanity. You'd love to see it. Chaps, you would love to see it. Talk to me about Ferrari, Chez, and your boy Charles finally doing something good. Oh, he was parked up in, was it FP1?
Did he
stacked it still?
Do you mean a non-points-paying, non-competitive session? He stacked it. Oh, dear.
It wouldn't be an F1 race weekend, Chez, without Charles Leclerc stacking it somewhere.
But he's being smarter about it now. He's not doing it in qualifying. He's doing it when it doesn't matter. So, you know, that's progress.
Mate, no? on the anniversary of Gilles Villeneuve's death, that dude reminds me so much of Gilles. He's still in May of 2024. True. And also, it's not like Gilles, bless him, RIP Gilles. It's not like Gilles didn't have deficiencies, right? And I think Charles is still the embodiment of win it or bin it. I don't see that.
Where was the bin it this weekend?
But it was, okay, fair, not this weekend. So I'll give him that. And he drove well. He came back and he faced down the adversity. But that's something that he's never lacked for. Adversity's net focus and minimising for unforced errors has always been his challenge. And I'm not sure, Chez, that I see that trend into zero. Okay. Not as much as I'd hoped from the fella.
Like I'm not going to say, like I did before, that Charles Leclerc has never made a mistake. That would be inaccurate.
Disingenuous.
Inaccurate. But he's doing kind of what I expected him to do. That he had a bit of a deficit to Carlos Sainz for what, two races that they were at, that Carlos was ahead of him. And then from China, he's worked at the problem that he's had in qualifying with the tire prep, beat Carlos by a little bit in China, did the same thing here.
Be careful around Miami, because but for a Checo Perez who clearly got too excited and thought he was on F1 2024.
I'm talking about qualifying, right? Because that's the thing that he's famed for, and he was starting to fall back a little bit for two races. He's brought that back again, and I agree that he got lucky at turn one, but actually his pace on hard tires in the second stint was pretty impressive, I thought. And actually, the contention that he should have given way for Carlos, the fact that Carlos was struggling to get past Oscar Piastri before they made their pit stops, makes me think that there was no guarantee that if he'd been let through, that he was suddenly going to waltz straight past the McLaren. So
fair.
I can't see a major hole in Charles' performance this weekend.
Baxty.
Well, you want to talk about Ferrari drivers and holes in their weekends? Let's talk about Carlos Sainz.
Thank you. Let's talk about
him parking it on the apex and destroying Oscar Piastri's front wing when he's going for an overtake.
Yes.
Now, he was hot-headed because Oscar had run him off the road, but a la the Max Verstappen rule, you can do that now. So, yeah, he ran him off track. The stewards are like, well, you know, we let Max do it, so kind of have to just let that one pass. And I'm talking about 2019, not 2021 here. And he got hot-headed. He goes for a move. He locks up. He parks it on the apex, and Oscar's race is ruined. And then he gets a five-second penalty after the race, which cost him one place. But Carlos, no. And then getting all hot-headed on the radio saying, tell him to give me back the place and he won't get a penalty. Just tell him. It's like, well, first of all, that's not your decision to make, Carlos. Like, you made it. Yeah, okay, he forced you off the track. But, yeah, that was poor racecraft there.
And if we're talking about mistakes, that's two races in a row, right, where he's made a major error in a competitive session.
Yeah.
Like, and Cameron, genuinely, I don't want to do this. Like, I don't want to do the tit for tat, Charles hasn't done this, therefore Carlos has done that. I'm being forced into it because drivers make freaking mistakes, man. This is just what happens. Sometimes you don't, you know, you're not working at your optimal. But having one or two races where that happens doesn't mean that you forget everything that's happened for like the 3 years beforehand. And that's what was happening with Carlos. And that's why everyone suddenly comes back and goes, look, this is the Carlos that I remember. Just there needs to be a little bit of calming down of the recency bias, right? Having one race where one driver wins something, you know, Lando winning the Miami Grand Prix doesn't suddenly mean that he is a championship challenger and he's washed the next race because he didn't win. There has to be context taken into every argument, and that's where this is lacking, I think.
One swallow does not a summer make, then I agree with you, Chez. But you can leverage that at Charles Leclerc, right? If he's a single race merchant, then do you know what I mean? Let me see how he gets on over the course of the 24 races. I'm not going to give him props because he's had an upturn in form. He was lucky to beat Carlos Sainz Jr. If Checo Perez knew what time it was and remembered that it was turn one, lap one, then Carlos Sainz would have nabbed Charles Leclerc yet again. I think,
If what's the maybes.
here's my prediction for you, Chez. Carlos didn't have his. I think Carlos has. I've long said that those Ferrari drivers almost want to combine their characteristics, right? Charles Leclerc's ability to come, he's out and out raw speed in absolute terms, and his ability to face down adversity. If Carlos could steal those, and if Charles could steal Carlos's brain, both inside and outside the car, and his ability to work his way through a race and package up a championship, I think you'd have the perfect driver. However, Chez, I will say this for the avoidance of doubt. I'm not going to give it to a recency bias is a thing. So too is availability heuristic. But I'm not going to give Charles Leclerc props for doing what he's been doing over the past 3 years, which is putting together one race. Let me see that dude over the course of 24 races, because he will make mistakes. That won't be the last time that do a race weekend, Charles, sans mistakes. Put together a couple. How about look at Max Verstappen? Because we're not talking about Carlos Sainz Jr. here, are we, Chez? That's not what we're on about here. Charles
We are.
Leclerc.
That's the problem.
No, well, that is Charles Leclerc's problem. Because if he's performing each and every single week to his uppermost potential ceiling, then the comparator shouldn't be Carlos Sainz. It should be Max Verstappen, Chez. Now, I know you normalize that equation for the car, of course, but yet and still, the dude, for the avoidance of doubt, still makes too many mistakes, Chez, and it's not good for who you think he is and who he can be. He still makes far too many bloody mistakes, Chez, is the point.
I would argue that actually that is starting to switch. And of that combining, what would you rather have? Pace or this sort of nebulous
But you
nous
do,
thing?
but bruv, you do, Charlotte, a disservice by even couching the argument in those terms. Why is it
But
either
yeah,
or?
but I'm
To win
okay,
a
but I'm
championship, Chez, we know that you
yeah.
need both. I was listening to, let me give you this very quickly before you
Hit
come
me.
back. I was listening to friend of the channel, Matt Bishop's podcast, God Tier,
Oh,
and
yeah, it's good.
Colossally, and Colossally, That's History, the third part of the Senna series. And he said he was comparing Senna and Prost, and I thought he doesn't miss a beat, does he, with his verbiage, Mr. Bishop? And he said Senna was the quickest driver that I've ever seen. He was quicker than Prost. Some people would argue Prost was better, but Senna was quicker. And I think that encapsulates everything that I'm saying to you as far as Charles Leclerc is concerned. He is rapid. No one can take that away from him. But what about these other things, Chez? I want to see progress in ticking off these unforced errors. Trend
Okay.
those to zero, chap, because if not, you're doomed to get destroyed by Max Verstappen, as he has done erstwhile. Chez, true or false?
Yeah. Okay. Number one, Senna with that unbelievable pace won three world titles. I'm just going to put that out there. Second is that actually Charles on trend, going on trend, is actually doing that. The Japan race where okay he didn't qualify as well as he should have, but actually in the race that was he showed something that everyone said he couldn't do. He showed great tire management, and he was talking to the pit wall about about doing what he wanted to do. And again he replicated that again in China, and he's done it again in Miami. It was very much a case of, look, I know I'm not going to get past Oscar at the moment. I'm going to go as hard as I possibly can. As soon as he's out of the way, I'll unleash some pace. He did it. And then when he had the hard tire in the second stint, okay, he didn't have the pace that the McLaren, the Red Bull did on that tire in that stint. I think with track position, if Lando had come out, as you said, with the safety car further back down the pack, I think that would have been a comfortable second. As it was a comfortable third. He did absolutely what the car was able to do, both in qualifying and in the race. You can't ask for more from a Formula One driver, I don't think.
I can, Chez, of Charles Leclerc. Again, when you say things like that, of Charles Leclerc, if you're talking about Pierre Gasly as an example, Chez, I will let you off with that. When you're talking about Charles Leclerc, a man of his talents ostensibly, I feel like you do him a disservice.
What, right? What do you want him to do?
Because he's got this talent, bruv. He's supposed to be doing Singapore 2018 settings, Lewis Hamilton. That's the level. That's how highly I think both you and me rate this dude. So for you to say, well, he's just driving the car to its foot. Like, I don't... Stop making the mistakes, Shaw.
His lap in qualifying was like that, though. Like, he was... Like, if you look at the delta against Max for the majority of that lap, he was ahead, in a Ferrari. So it's not like he's not able to get the most out of that car. And you can't outperform the car. Physics doesn't work like that. That's not a thing. But getting the absolute most out of everything that car can give you is what he is doing. And what he showed you in the race was there was no more that car could do.
Let's see, Chez. If Charles Leclerc was a stock, I would be short. We will talk again. I will reserve judgment. Let's give him another six races, let's say. And if I don't see any unforced errors between now and then I will defer to your infinite wisdom. Baxty, talk to me very quickly about Logan Sargeant. Are we going to see Andrea Kimi Antonelli in a car, in a Logan Sargeant-shaped monocoque, between now and Monza, do you think?
Well, I think there's been all these rumours, hasn't there, which then Williams and Mercedes have kind of been like, oh, no, we haven't done that.
Critically, though, the caveat was always before, but by Imola, that's what Toto and James said, right? It wasn't like ever.
It was... No, I think... I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if they waited until Monza so they don't have to really go through with this process. And I think they might want to give Kimi a bit more time in F2. Yeah, I think if he scores a podium in F2, or a win even, then they might go, right, let's get him in the car. Yeah, but because I think the window on getting Max Verstappen into a Mercedes is closing, even with the news that Adrian Newey is leaving. I just don't see it happening. And I think possibly Kimi is now the option for them to go alongside George. And you want to, if they've got an opportunity to give him race time and got the opportunity to get him behind F1 machinery, current F1 machinery, you've got to take that chance. And if Williams are happy to do it, then all power to them. I think Logan was having a good race up until what happened. I don't see the accident as being his fault. I know people have blamed him for not seeing Kevin, but Kevin probably shouldn't have stuck his car in where he did. And you could hear the devastation in Logan's voice on the radio, which was, it doesn't matter if you're a fan of his or not. It was quite heartbreaking to hear because he probably felt that maybe that was his career done. I hope he gets another couple of races, but I think, inevitably we'll see him probably post Monaco, I would say, because they're not going to chuck him in at Monaco. That would be ridiculous. Maybe Barcelona they might bring him in, but we'll have to see. It's not looking good for him. He's got to score points, basically, I think, because Albon had a bit of a stinker this weekend and has been on a bit of a downtrend of form for the last couple of races, and yet Logan can't really take advantage of that. So perhaps now is the time to try and get a better test, just not just for Alex, but for the team as well.
Oof. I don't hate that. And Chez, just before we go, I was going to ask you to put some respect on Mercedes' name because Lewis Hamilton, apparently, some said, had a decent car underneath him. But sadly, Chez, we've run out of time, chap, so we're going to have to postpone. No, go on, Chez. Talk to me about Mercedes super quickly, bro.
Yeah, they were all right, weren't they? Again, qualifying was a bit of a problem as usual, but Lewis was dynamite on the mediums at the
Fourth fastest machine on track for a while there.
But Checo was a nice roadblock for pretty much everyone trying to get to the front in whichever stint he was in. It was a shame actually because you talked about Miami being a bit of a rubbish track, didn't you? And I think I argued with you about that a little bit, but it
Is
turned
rubbish,
out
that's
that
just
I mean, that was a problem. I thought there
dodgy.
would be better overtaking opportunities, but even cars that had a quicker delta just weren't able to get past. They had to make really unorthodox moves into corners where they shouldn't have been having
The
to pass.
Oscar
Although,
Piastri one. Have you seen the one from the end of the race on Zhou Guanyu? He
mate, levels,
sends it from about five postcodes back.
death trap nearly.
It's the only way to do it. Only way to do it, wasn't it?
But death trap, that was very close.
Oh, because Zhou is going, oh, I'm going to make the corner. Oh, crap, there's a McLaren there.
Death trap.
And we haven't even spoken about K-Mag's horrible driving in the sprint race when he was just like, I'm going to push Lewis off at every opportunity and then hit him. And I'm going
It's
to,
pretty
I don't like driving like
bad.
this. That, I mean,
Sunk
there's no
cost.
wonder he is now 2 points off a race ban.
Mate, he's a man of yesteryear. He's K-Mag. He won't be here next year. Bless him. And again, people talk very highly. Matt Bishop in particular and Richard Williams on their podcast speak very highly, I think, of K-Mag. Peter Windsor too. I mean, he was meant to be really good. One of those ones like Hülkenberg, but it's crazy to think how Hülkenberg has outstripped him, the extent to which he's outstripped him. But I don't know. It's
Bishop's worked quite closely with K-Mag, hasn't he? So, like, there's
yeah, he's
a link
quick.
there. Yeah, there's a bit of a personal link there.
He's very quick, is K-Mag. But hey, I digress. Right, chaps, decent episode. Shall we wrap there? Unless there is any other business, Chazinho and Sabaxti.
No.
I did want to talk about Trump, but we haven't got time, have we? Holy smokes. Nah, cancel. Bax is like, why did you even bring that negative cloud upon this
The
podcast?
orange Cheeto.
There was enough orange
There was
at the
enough
Miami
orange,
Grand
wasn't
Prix.
there, in the papaya-coloured garage.
It was all down to me that he won.
There's something
Winning,
that.
winning, winning.
This is another reason that the whole weekend kind of cheesed me off, because are we non-political in F1, or are we politicising? Mohammed Ben Sulayem, Zak Brown, I put that question to you, but I digress. Chaps, you guys have been legends. That has been another episode of the Shakedown Podcast. I've been your boy Cameron. For Baxty, for Shez, do myself and yourself a favour by liking, comment, subscribing. If you're on the YouTubes, if you're listening on a podcasting platform, 5 stars, por favor, and a cheeky follow wouldn't go amiss. Between now and next time, as always, look, but never stare.